Anyway, so so we started talking about a different aspect of Torah and Derech Eretz than we had been speaking about in terms of the the Rishonim and the early Achronim and their interpretation of Avos, namely the phrase as it came to be associated in more modern period, based on the writings of Shamshon Fall Hirsch. And I was like, and I think we were starting to analyze that. I was trying to point out that if you look in the Perush on Avos, for example, and some of the other Perushim as well, you don't yet get the full impact, of the, the association of that phrase, as important as it is, with things having to do with culture and intellectual achievement, something we would call either science or even philosophy, culture, science, and philosophy. More the point is about respecting, I guess, the venue of Olam Hazeh, as a place in which the Ribbono Shel Olam chose for mankind, and more specifically also Klal Yisrael, to pursue the challenge of leading a meaningful life, by elevating the physical world, by achieving a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and by attaining some sort of spiritual stature. And that consequently anything having to do with like minag derech eretz, whether it is understanding, the nature of the world so that we can, properly navigate it, but also respecting, even like respecting the ecology of the world, respecting, human nature, and therefore social interaction, that all of these things, which are very pragmatic on the one hand, are kind of raised to a level in Rav Hirsch's writings of more of an ideal, and having to do, as I say, with respect, and there's kind of an implicit, I think, perspective also, that all of this isn't b'di'evet but l'chatchila. In other words, in contrary to another prevalent view, which is the view of the world as prosdor, but in a very for sure challenging, everybody views it's challenging, but it's kind of like a minefield, a little bit more than what I've characterized in the past is like the perspective that you get in the worldview of the Mesilas Yesharim, but of course based on earlier Chazals, and then picked up because that's such an influential world work rather, by many subsequent thinkers, the idea that like the world is a a dark place, not just potentially, but matter is associated with with chomrius, which associated with yetzer hara, and again it's treacherous and it's filled with minefields, and you have to navigate around it and come out intact. Good to see Moshe, always. In order to come out unscathed, and then of course you get the bliss, and the benefit, which is all worth it, of, of Olam Haba. But in Rav Hirsch's writings, just like in the Rav's writings, it's more that, not only is the challenge greater, given, the realities and the complications, and therefore the challenges, day to day in a physical, in a material, complicated world, but in the way that which man was created in that world, but that, that somehow, elevating that existence and respecting, not seeing it as a b'di'evet, but seeing it as a, as a kind of an ideal way, yafa sha'achas, ba'olam hazeh, and therefore embracing, even like, some of the, I wouldn't say conventions in an artificial way, necessarily, although you probably have to respect those at a certain point for pragmatic reasons, but certainly the propensities, the inclinations of man's nature and of the world's, you know, construction, you know, that this is like a you know, kind of also an opportunity and a keyum, as I say, in like bending, you know, reality to, you know, to a spiritual purpose. So certainly in the parish on Avos, which isn't necessarily intended to be comprehensive at all, you know, I think it was what it was. It was, you know, Shiurim in Perkei Avos, you know, on a Shabbos afternoon, you know, where, you know, Mariv is, you know, the termination point. And, you know, I think Balabatim probably haven't changed so much in their Olam Hazen nature, you know. You know, when it's time for Vehurachum, they get very passionate about that. You know, there's manim like, you know, to be pünktlich, but, right? I say that right? Kind of. Pünktlich, yeah. When it's time for, you know, the David Baruch, you know, you've got to sing it. So I think these were, you know, this I did a little research. You know, the Pirkei Avos, anyway, is just a more, you know, limited, it was limited in time and, you know, the audience and so on. But it's just fascinating that this is, of course, the locus classicus. This is the Mishnah of Yafato Talmud Torah Im Derech Eretz, you know, which the ideology came to be associated with. And yet, you know, the focus in that context is what I just mentioned, that Derech Eretz, I read it last time, I'll just read it again. The term Derech Eretz includes all the situations arising from and dependent on the, I just think it's a very excellent formulation of that, on the circumstances that the earth is the place where individuals must live, fulfill his destiny, dwell together with others, and that he must utilize resources and conditions provided on earth in order to live and accomplish his purpose. Now, you don't want to work against the environment. You want to work, in other words, to idealize the environment and to promote, you know, the potential in that environment, you know, to be transformative in an important way. Accordingly, the term Derech Eretz is used primarily to refer to ways earning a living. This is quite a range, but the, you know, Tzad HaShavez, I believe what I've my finger on, so it's earn a living, to the social order that prevails on earth, as well as to the mores and considerations of courtesy and propriety arising from social living, and also things pertinent to good breeding and general education. Not the good breeding part, but the general education part is kind of the closest you get, you know, to, you know, this more aspirational, you know, Torah Derech Eretz as Torah V'Chachma, you know, or Torah V'Tarbut, you know, idea. But you don't get beyond that in this parish in Avos, which is fine. We believe that the explanation, She'igia Shneim Mishkachas Avon, implies that the term Derech Eretz used here denotes, above all, the business and occupational activities carried on, you know, for purposes of earning a living. And we're told, Yigia Shneim keeps away sin, but Mashkachas, it causes sin also to be forgotten. It keeps sinful thoughts from rising. By this we believe, only a way of life that is devoted to the pursuit of study and economic independence, which basically is a investment in independence, but in human dignity, basically, can take up our time, right, to such a degree that there will be no unoccupied hours, that's more of a negative formulation, during which we can indulge in thoughts that are far from good, etc. What is more, kol Torah she'enima malacha, he who does not pursue some gainful employment alongside the study of Torah, runs the risks of being forced, right, to, you know, to stop his studies because of poverty, being driven to wrongdoing, but that's already part of the more classical Perushim of Yafa Torah Derech Eretz. Yeah. Well, because we did that massive copyright violation. page 465 to 466? Okay, yeah. So I think it's very interesting. And again, in later in Pirkei Avos, this is now I'm on page 466, that, you know, in Gimel Chaf Aleph, you have, again, a similar formulation. Im ein Torah ein Derech Eretz, im ein Derech Eretz ein Torah. Right? That's very similar statement by Chazal, by in Avos, right? Without the Torah, without spiritual guidance and moral ennoblement, communicated by the teaching of the Torah, any endeavor to establish, maintain, and advance a civilized society on earth will be in vain. Conversely, without Derech Eretz, which means if an orderly way of life is not fostered, then the guidance and ennoblement inherent in the Torah lack a foundation on the earth. In that case, the understanding for a great many situations covered by the Torah's teaching will be lost, as will be just as great a part of its practical application, you know, to daily living. So again, these two statements in Avos would not have been, I think they're really important for the reasons that I just described. I think there's a certain, you know, the expansiveness of it, what it includes, and the inclusion of things that are very pragmatic and somewhat conventional, as well as the range, you know, which you could have simply attributed, as I said, to just like, you know, Eitzah Tova, in my opinion, by putting them together under this rubric, which is glorified, you know, by Chazal, Yafa Torah Im, right, Im Ein, Ein, and so on. By doing that, you know, implicitly, again, there's a certain appreciation, you know, for, as I say, the opportunity as well as the challenge, you know, and seeing the human or the earthly venue, you know, as something which is, you know, part and parcel of development as a Torah personality, and that, you know, by definition also kind of upgrades, you know, some of these factors, which you could have just said are, you know, purely pragmatic, you know, they become, you know, more significant, you know, when you put them together and acknowledge them in this way. However, in other writings of Rav Hirsch, especially in the, you know, the most important one, which is the Perush al HaTorah, that's where Dovi's writing his, you know, abridgment of, right? But, you know, there is a one-volume abridgment. You don't know? Oh, there is a one volume of Hirsch al HaTorah, translated by Gertrude Hirschler. I'm meant to tell you afterwards, but yeah, which is a digest. It doesn't have all the details, obviously. You know, but so before you start, you know, working on it.
It's also published by Feldheim?
What?
It's also published by Feldheim?
Yeah. And it's a one volume of the Gertrude Hirschler, who's like one of the translators of the family. Put out a one volume, but in his Perush al HaTorah, and more expansively also in, you know, in the collected writings, here you have Rav Hirsch's presentations of a much more aspirational, and it goes well beyond, you know, the etiquette and the good breeding, you know, and the respect for the ecology, you know, and of course, you know, the very central role of Parnassa for the sake of dignity and independence, you know, for its pragmatic as well as its self-image and dignity impact. Here's where you get very strong statements about the potential contributions of culture per se, not just being cultured, you know, the effect, you know, like a cosmopolitan, you know, person who can be, you know, perceived as a good influence, you know, an image, etc., but the actual, you know, talk about culture itself being, having value, having, you know, inherent significance, as we'll see in a moment, through, this is more like the Rav's terminology, but it's the same principle, through the prism of Torah and on the basis of the Torah's assessment, you know, of individual aspects or dimensions of this, but nonetheless making a positive, you know, contribution to one's spiritual makeup, not just, I wouldn't say concession, because before my whole point was that it wasn't a concession, not just a facet of acknowledging, you know, the earth, you know, and the material world as the chosen venue for, you know, cultivating, you know, a Torah personality, but more than that, you know, where the culture, the science, even, you know, the philosophy, you know, plays a role in the actual personal development and, you know, illumination, let's say, of Torah, and of, therefore, of a meaningful existence. And that, of course, is a whole different category. So, for example, on page 462, okay, Derech Eitz Chaim, right? So in Tana de Be'eliyahu and Vayikra Rabbah, this way that leads to the Tree of Life is called Derech Eretz, the way of culture and social wisdom, okay, that already, but which educates man to morality. So we're talking about Tochen now, in culture, you know, and social wisdom that enhances one's morality and order in his social life. As Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Nachman says, right, Chofav Doros Kidma Derech Eretz Es HaTorah, right, Derech Zu Derech Eretz V'Acharkach Eitz HaChayim Zu Torah, right? And the idea is that culture begins the education of mankind and Torah completes it. So again, that's a very strong statement, right? There's a partnership, in other words. Chachma is the, you know, the beginning, it's the early study, you know, of which culminates in and is transformed by Torah. In the case of Israel, Derech Eretz and Torah are tied together. In the development of mankind, culture precedes Torah. Hence, the Jew is pleased with all culture, big statement, provided, this is the important, you know, condition, that it leads to the recognition of truth and the cultivation of goodness. And he goes on to discuss, you know, the corruption of culture, which always is a risk factor. But where culture is put in the service of sensuality, the result is increased corruption. Such misuse of Derech Eretz, however, this is a big statement, does not negate the intrinsic value of culture. Meaning, the risk, you know, doesn't negate the value, and the risk obviously doesn't even negate, you know, the reward, you know, benefit, you know, in as long as obviously that, you know, comes at a reasonable calculation. For ein derech eretz, im ein derech eretz, ein Torah. Hence, the Jew should cherish all that is good and true in culture, and by his personal appearance and demeanor, as a cultured individual, demonstrate that to be a Jew means a man raised to a higher plane. There's an aspect in Rav Hirsch's writings which always come back also to the image, you know, and to, you know, the Kiddush Hashem, you know, the image of Torah in the world, you know, for others. He has that universalistic theme throughout his writings. He, you know, again, being a Neis La'amim, you know, an Or La'goyim, as we know, are statements in, you know, in Torah and Tanakh and Chazal pick up on them. You know, they've gotten a little bit of a bad name because, you know, Or LeGoyim in particular and these other things, you know, they became like, you know, the sole focus of certain segments of, for sure, the Jewish world and even in, you know, certain segments of the left of the Orthodox world, you know, in a more exaggerated way, where it became, you know, a basis of heterin for things that are not, you know, heterable, or even if they were, you know, are out of whack with the, you know, the significance of that. But, you know, like all things, the, you know, the overstatement and abuse, you know, of certain concepts, you know, should not, you know, negate their value, you know, when understood in balance. Rav Hirsch actually is very, they say, focused on this, and in a good way, you know, but in a little bit of an exaggerated way, but in a good way, certainly not at the expense of Torah at all, in addition to other people at the expense of. And there are certain communities that, you know, because of all this, have kind of ignored that aspect completely, and that is certainly, you know, unacceptable. So the idea that, you know, a part of one's, you know, spiritual ascent, you know, which includes openness to what's good in culture and intellectual achievement, is also continues to be connected to the Derech Eretz of, you know, personal appearance and demeanor and the impact that that has, you know, on Kiddush Hashem for others, you know, is not inconsistent, although it didn't have to be there, but it's, I think, actually very holistically consistent, you know, with Rav Hirsch's general writings. And this, I think, I did read last time, but just the continuation on this page. So that's a piece from Bereishis Gimel of Chaf Daled, for those who don't have the sheets that Akiva copied. But then when you continue, the next piece is, I think, from, what is it, Vayikra Yudches, is a really fascinating piece. I believe I started with this last time, maybe. And that is, he starts with the Torah's Kohanim, which, if anything, gives the opposite impression. You know, so when you're, you know, encountering texts that are, you know, seemingly, superficially at least, contrary, you know, to your ideology, you know, that's always a good test. You know, when you have to contend with apparently conflicting or contradictory evidence. So Torah's Kohanim says further regard to Torah study, Lalechas Bahem Asem Ikar Bialta Asem Tvela. Lalechas Bahem Shelo Yehe Masa Acha Umatancha Ela Bahem Shelo Ta'arav Bahem Dvarim Acherim Ba'olam Shelo Tomar Lamarti Chachmas Yisrael Alameid Chachmas Umas Ha'olam Talmudomar Lalechas Bahem Ein Charashoy Lipater Mitochan. So that's a sifra, you know, which could be, you know, the emblematic statement for a Torah-only approach, which, of course, is a very legitimate approach in its own right. So, you know, what is a champion of Torah and Derech Eretz, you know, going to do with that? You're not going to deny it. I mean, every sifra, obviously, is precious. But Rav Hirsch's deep conviction is such, you know, that in the, again, in the global evidence, he thinks it needs to be, you know, not even dismissed as a, like, oh, there's a, you know, there were always two views, or a yesh cholkin, you know, but you have to reread it, he thinks, in light of what to him is a decisive global evidence. It appears that the opening statement, sentence of this statement, asem ikar ve'alta asem tefela, is designed to keep us from a misunderstanding. We should not understand from subsequent sentences of the statement that we must completely ignore all knowledge gained from non-Jewish sources. Which, if you read the Sifra Kipshuto, that's exactly what it actually says. But again, if you believe that that is inconceivable and you're somebody, you know, who has, you know, a command of, you know, halachic literature and haggadic literature, etc., and you have a deep conviction about, you know, what's conceivable and what's not, that's a very telling, you know, perspective. So he says, no, it can't mean that. Only that we should make Torah our principal concern, I mean, Ikar v'Tofel, and the knowledge we gain from the Torah should be regarded as absolute and unquestionable. And that's the only knowledge that should be viewed as, you know, pure knowledge, let's say, is Torah knowledge. And all other knowledge, even if it is beneficial, right, is beneficial, but in a relative way, meaning it's contingent upon it being true and coordinating with, you know, and not being, you know, undermining of Torah knowledge. So in some respect, what we're saying is this is like an exclusive, you know, truth. Anything other than that, you know, doesn't have, you know, inherent validity, but would be, the interpretation would be on the word inherent. And the knowledge we gain from the Torah should be regarded as absolute and unquestionable. That's these basically heightened, you know, the word, you know, what chachma means, basically. Regarded as absolute and unquestionable. Other disciplines are regarded as auxiliary. They're to be studied only if they're capable of aiding Torah study and are subordinated to it as the tafel to the ikar. So again, whether you're convinced that that's the pshat in the Sifra, you know, there are multiple, you know, statements in Chazal, some of which, you know, not all statements are by one author. You know, the idea that there has always been an argument about, you know, either the risk-reward or even the inherent value of, let's say, you know, culture or secular knowledge, you know, whether it's science or philosophy. The idea that, you know, that's an old argument, or you know, Torah only versus, you know, Torah ends, you know, doesn't particularly perturb me. But again, I think the phenomenon, trying to co-opt it kind of for your ideology is really fascinating. And, again, we're dealing with somebody who's, extraordinary stature, makes that, really important. So the Torah's truths must be remained for us what is absolute and unconditional. It's like a creative rereading, the standard by which to measure all results obtained in other branches. So in the end of the day, again, whether you're enamored with the pshat in the Sifra, is less significant than the phenomenon, but also the formulations of what the relationship, should actually be are again, I wouldn't say that they're, I think many of them are obvious to somebody who's thought about this question, extensively, but they're important, they're clear, and they are the parameters that are emerging from trying to integrate seemingly contradictory sources, and that's not the cause of them. It's the manifestation of, again, this well-thought-out, very layered, perspective. All we absorb and create intellectually should be considered from the perspective of the Torah. Very ish halacha kind of approach. We should not imagine that just as there is Jewish knowledge and truths, right, there is also non-Jewish knowledge and truths of equal importance and authority. This is a nod, assuming, to, what's sometimes called the double truth theory, which is associated with Averroes in the, in medieval philosophy, but became like a very popular, coping mechanism that was kind of masqueraded or camouflaged, as a philosophy. There are those who contend that, there never was such a view. It was more like, always just basically intended as a pragmatic, way to navigate life. Etienne Gilson, I believe, wrote that he was convinced that even Averroes himself didn't really think, that there are two, truths that seem to contradict each other, but, this kind of schizophrenic way of looking at the world. But it became a popular thing, and then, in the time of the Haskalah, it's it picked up certain bituyim, hevei, Yehudi beveitecha, something like that. Ish, I don't know the exact. I think it was a Yalag thing, Yehuda Leib Gordon. I think that was his aphorism, something like that. Hevei Yehudi beveitecha. Somebody help me out here? Anybody know? Enosh or something? Something like that. Anyway, so what Rav Hirsch is saying here is like this compartmental, and you hear it bismaneinu, I've heard it bismaneinu. Like in shul, I'm wearing my bekasha and my gartel. Not mine, but. but when I'm, teaching, literature in my secular university, then I'm true to the principles of... So obviously, that is not an acceptable... What's the basis of that compartmentalization? Double truth theory. There's the truth of religion, and there's the truth of science. So, it doesn't seem like a very credible, and certainly not if it ever was, even if people, in other words, held it, it's obviously, a fundamentally unattractive or really... kind of impossible to believe ideology. And that's kind of what Rav Hirsch is, because again, this is what people encountered. We should not imagine that just as there is Jewish knowledge and truths, there's also non-Jewish knowledge and truths of equal importance and authority. He doesn't say double truth theory, but I assume this is what he's referring to. And that when we absorb our fill of Torah wisdom, we should then turn with the same spirit to the wisdom of the nations. If we do so, and again, this is from an enthusiastic advocate of Torah and Chachma. If we do so, placing in our minds one field of knowledge next to the other, truth beside truth, we shall be devoid of uniform convictions and views, and we shall be lost because of the discordance of our ideas and conceptions. Rather, just as we are sure that Torah comes from God and all other branches of knowledge discovered by man are merely human products, containing results of man's limited insight into the nature of things, so are we sure that there's only one truth, one discipline, that can serve as our yardstick and evaluator of all other disciplines. They're just very important formulations, which are valid only conditionally. Hence, even when we study and occupy ourselves with other fields, we must never abandon the basis of Torah or depart from its aims. All our intellectual endeavors should be devoted to the words of the Torah, the Ein Charasho Eli Pater Mitochan, which is part of the formulation of that Sifra. Yeah. Adam b'tzeisacha. I mean, it starts even in the other way. Vihudi ba'ohalecha. Okay, very good. Is it Yalag?
Yeah.
It is Yalag. See, I took you know, Hebrew literature here in Yeshiva College back in the day. You know, and I wasn't there at every class, but I guess I was there in that class. Okay, great. Thank you. So this idea of the prism of Ikar B'Tofel, of there being like, you know, a pure and primary and like intrinsic, you know, authoritative knowledge, and then there being another level of knowledge, you know, to complement it, you know, to enhance it, you know, but that is contingent upon, you know, its the authority of the first. You know, is also something that he gets back to in other contexts. This is Dvarim Vav Zayin, and if you have this page 464. Again, Bidibarta Matseya Sam Ikar Al Taseya Sam Tzvela Lo Yei Masacha Mat. Same Sifre. But again, the study of Torah shall be our main intellectual pursuit, and it doesn't just mean main, like, you know, 80% this, 20% that. The point is, it's main in the sense that, you know, it's the prism. You know, it's the one which also determines the validity of the other. We are not to study the Torah incidentally. We're not to study Torah from the standpoint of another science or for the sake of that science. So too, we're careful not to introduce into the sphere of Torah foreign ideas that were developed on the basis of other premises. Rather, we should always be mindful of the superiority of the Torah. And this isn't relative, it's absolute, right? Which differs from all other scientific knowledge through its divine origin. And then he makes reference to his earlier Peirush in Vayikra. And then he says, you know, we already explained that these statements of our sages do not demand of us to completely ignore all scientific knowledge, even though that particular one does sound like that. Rather, we should occupy ourselves with this knowledge only from the Torah's, you know, perspective. And So, if you just look at, you know, a cross-section of all these things, this is kind of what emerges. A very strong one in the Collected Writings, Volume 7, page 86, or in our pages 466, this is even further statement. Judaism is probably, and again, the context matters, because sometimes the context, obviously, is one in which, you know, either the explanation of a Maamar Chazal or the topic. The Collected Writings are a very rich collection, but it's on everything, you know, the holidays, you know, all sorts of different, you know, themes, the calendar, you know, the, you know, Nebuah, you know, Chazal, everything has, you know, so depending on what the context is, you know, sometimes you're in a position where, you know, the balance is to talk up, you know, an unappreciated, you know, chachma or tarbut, and sometimes it's like, you know, to rein in, you know, what appears to be too much. So that's why you also get these, you know, different, you know, starting points and qualifications. So here's a very enthusiastic one. Judaism is probably the only religion that does not declare extra me nulla salus, there is no salvation outside of myself, that happily welcomes any intellectual or moral advance. This is, again, a very enthusiastic one, no matter what its origin. Indeed, the timeless words of the Jewish prophets look with firm assurance to the ever-growing, ever-spreading spiritual and moral ennoblement, not only of the Jews, but all of mankind. And this is a very enthusiastic one, as I've just said. Judaism is probably the only religion that teaches its followers to view not only the early light of dawn, the blossoms of springtime, the darkness of thunder, the flashes of lightning, not only the sight of anything beautiful, sublime, powerful, or beneficial in nature, but also the sight of any human being great in wisdom or knowledge, meaning the bracha that you make, you know, when you encounter a special, you know, intellect or a person who represents a certain culture, no matter what his nationality or religion, as a revelation of the divine. Whenever Jews says explicitly, whenever Jews behold such an individual, they pronounce a blessing in praise of God who has given his wisdom, you know, asher chalak, you know, michachmato, you know, libnei adam. And that, you know, leads into, you know, clear educational programs. So this isn't all just, you know, some abstraction, not the qualifications and not the, you know, enthusiasm. You know, he really wanted to implement this. So the only thing that can save us as a true union of religious knowledge and religious life with a proper secular education. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. The only thing that can save us is a true union, but he doesn't mean an equal union, right, of religious knowledge and religious life with a proper secular education. This is the intimate, wholehearted union of Torah and Derech Eretz, as it was taught and bequeathed to us by our great ancestors. Meaning, I didn't make up Torah and Derech Eretz. The truth is, he might have been the first one, you know, to interpret that phrase in this way, and that in itself is a powerful thing, because it's a powerful phrase, obviously. I mean, you get the Rishonim discussing, you know, what the Im means and what's Iker and Tafel, and it's all over Avos, and Haneg Men Minag Derech Eretz is all over Chazal. So choosing in a matter which isn't at all obvious, as reflected by the earlier Avos commentary of his, as well as all other Perushim pretty much, to say that Derech Eretz means broader culture and even educationally, whatever, is a huge step. So when he says, this is the wholehearted union of Torah and Derech Eretz as it was taught and bequeathed to us by our great ancestors, I don't think he's making the claim that, I don't know if this is historical true, but my impression is that he's the first person, you know, to interpret Torah in Derech Eretz this way. And I don't think he's denying that, but he's talking about the, you know, the principles that underlie it. That is something which he believes, and I think it's true, is bequeathed to us by our great ancestors. But in order to achieve this union, we need schools, Jewish schools, at which the sacred heritage of the community of Jacob, biblical and Talmudic learning, will be pursued hand in hand, right, with all that is genuine and noble in civilization. That sounds very familiar, right? Beginning with Aleph Beis and the ABC, you know, and or the German ABC, and continue with every subsequent phase of study and intellectual development. At schools where religious and secular knowledge will be cultivated in a well-integrated manner, the hearts and minds of boys and girls will be set so firmly in one consistent direction from the very beginning that as adults they will be able to meet the challenges of life as truly educated Jews, as individuals of true Jewish education and culture. Train the young so they may cope with the demands of life. So this is a new element in the pieces that I've discussed. This is nothing else than the meaning of the timeless adage, Chanoch Lenar Al Pidarko. So Chanoch Lenar Al Pidarko includes, you know, Torah im Derech Eretz. And of course, here in this piece, you know, even as you're getting to the practical, like educational application, you know, there is a greater sense than the other pieces that I've read before. But of course, nothing takes place in a vacuum, you know, of, you know, the practical, you know, concerns, you know, of the age, namely meeting the challenges, you know, of 19th century German Jewish life, you know, in particular. And again, in another section, you know, also in section 7, this is on page, I don't know what page it is. What page is it? 467, probably. Give your children such educators who will teach them to view the understanding, I'll stop in a minute, of nature and history as a means for the accomplishment of their mission as men and as Jews. And to develop all their faculties, skills, and abilities to their maximum potential so they may be able to discharge their divinely ordained task. To achieve this end, why not employ the age-old principle, again, interesting, of Yafet Talmud Torah Im Derech Eretz, which weds religious and secular education to one another in mutual interdependence. And again, I think he's the first person, you know, to, you know, apply that particular interpretation to Yafet Talmud Torah Im Derech Eretz. But either way, If you will do so, you will see even in your own lifetime how Yigiyas Shneihem, see how different this is than the Avos interpretation, at least, how the careful simultaneous cultivation of both of these elements of education, Mashgacha Tzavon, will guard your children against error on both sides. And again, here you get the same, it's the program, and then partly it's connected with the hazards and the realities of 19th century German Jewish life. You will see with zest, with what zest and devotion your children will take to their Hebrew studies and drink in the spirit of the law of God and the wisdom of our sages, and how nevertheless, or perhaps precisely because of the special education they receive, they will be capable of competing on an equal basis with their contemporaries in the acquisition of all knowledge, talents, and skills that are part of their general education as members of a larger society. Then another piece. The goal is to educate our children to satisfy all the just demands that will be placed upon them by an age in which they live, by the age in which they live, on the one hand, and by Judaism on the other. Equipped with the best of all truly humanistic training, right, and guided by Jewish law of God and the heritage of our sages that will constantly give them new strength, life, counsel, and admonition, consolation, and inspiration, they'll be able to meet the challenges that life will hold for them. It would be most perverse and criminal of us to seek to instill into our children a contempt based on ignorance and untruth for everything that is not specifically Jewish, for all other human arts and sciences. Strong words, perverse and criminal. In the belief that by inculcating our children with such a negative attitude, we could, and again, here's where you see the hazards, you know, the shikulim of, you know, risk and reward. With such a negative attitude, we could safeguard them from contacts with scholarly and scientific endeavors of the rest of mankind. It is true, of course, that the results of secular research and study, this is a very important piece, we'll end with this one, will not always coincide with the truths of Judaism, for the simple reason they do not proceed from the axiomatic premises of Jewish truth. Meaning here's an acknowledgement of the risk and of the potential disaster in some cases, right? But the reality is, the point he's trying to make is two things. Number one, there's still intrinsic value, and therefore it's worth exploring, you know, conditions in which you can limit the risk so you gain the intrinsic benefits. But also, this is certainly a factor, there are risks in the other direction as well. And that's important to articulate as well. The reality is that our children will move in circles influenced and shaped by these results. Your children will come within the radius of secular human wisdom, whether it be in the lecture halls of academia or in the pages of literature. And if they discover that our own sages, whose teachings embody the truth, have taught us, shenasan michachmaso lebasar v'dam, the bracha we spoke of before, that it is God who has given of his own wisdom to mortals, they will come to overrate secular studies in the same measure in which they have been taught to despise them. Right? And this is a truth. That's why autodidacts, you know, who come to like a certain appreciation of secular culture later, you know, and on their own without guidance, and you know, in a kind of spirit of rebellion, can sometimes, you know, really be off and really be dangerous. I'm not saying about all autodidacts, but it's why having a framework and guidance becomes a very critical thing. They will come to overrate secular. This is a very insightful, true statement in all generations. Secular studies in the same measure in which they've been taught to despise them. You will then see that your simple-minded calculations, meaning trying to insulate or shield, were just as criminal, very strong words, as they were perverse. Criminal because they enlisted the help of untruth, supposedly, in order to protect the truth, very sharp, and because you have thus departed from the path upon which your own sages have proceeded, you, and beckoned you to follow them. Perverse because by doing so you've achieved precisely the opposite of what you wanted to accomplish. For now, your child, suspecting you either of deceit or lamentable ignorance, will transfer the blame and disgrace that should rightly be placed only upon you and your conduct to all Jewish wisdom and knowledge, all Jewish education and training which he received under your guidance. That he'll throw out the whole, you know, your child will consequently begin to doubt all of Judaism, which, so at least it must seem from your behavior, can exist only in the night and in the darkness of ignorance, and which must close its eyes to the mind's adherence to the light of all knowledge if it's not to perish. Things would have turned out differently if you had educated and raised your child al pi darko, if you would educate him to be a Jew and to love and observe his Judaism, together with the clear light of general human culture and knowledge, to discern the true value of secular wisdom and scholarship by measuring it against the standard of divinely given truths. Secular learning is merely a preliminary. If you had opened your child's eyes to genuine, thorough knowledge in both fields of studies, you would have taught them to love and cherish Judaism and Jewish knowledge all the more. And so on. okay. So, again, you get the full, I think, you know, range of considerations. What I want to do next time, not sure if we have, sorry, a little over time, is talk about Rav Breuer's, the great-great-grandfather, right?
Yeah.
Your great-great-grandfather?
Correct.
Yeah. So, what?
Correct.
Yeah. So, his essays, which are, of course, you know, two generations removed, but in particularly his very strong affirmation that Rav Hirsch's perspective was not a Horoas Shah, and his response to some of the, you know, critiques, especially from Eastern Europe, that took place. I also want to speak about the critiques. I'm just going to pick two of the most famous ones, the Talmidim of Reb Chaim, the Birchas Shmuel, in his famous piece in the end of Kiddushin, and the Kovei Tzurim of Hochanan Wasserman. Because I think that the critiques, of course, of these great men are all relevant. And to pursue Torah Derech Eretz, Torah Mada, whatever you want to call it, the differences are really minor, even though there are some. To pursue that in a, you know, uncompromising, you know, way, you know, needs to, you know, take into consideration these critiques, all of which Rav Hirsch did, obviously. And they're not so much critical of him; they're critical or skeptical, you know, about applying, you know, this ideology, you know, across the board, or in a particular era. You know, or by people who don't have maybe sufficient, you know, foundation. So I want to speak about both those aspects, next time, and then we'll move on to that.